I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Nazario Garcia. He is an author and oral historian. And this Friday, November 22nd, there will be a preview of the play When the Stars Trembled in Rio Puerco, which is based on his very first book by the same name. The play is written and directed by Shebana Coelho, who joins us today. And it's part of the Under One Umbrella Festival at Teatro Paraguas, whose founding member and artistic director, Argos McCallum, joins us as well. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Nazario, how did you collect these stories in the first place? How did you get the idea, and what was the process you followed of putting together this oral history of the Rio Puerco?
Well, there's a long and a short answer, I suppose, but let me give you the short answer. I had just returned from Spain in the late 1960s, and one of the things that happens in Spain, and even today, everybody goes into bookstore and browses, and I ran across this book in a local bookstore in Albuquerque called Cabezona, Forgotten Ghost Town. And one of the people who was interviewed turned out to be a dear friend of my paternal grandfather. So I went with an old tape recorder, reel to reel, and I thought, I must talk to my paternal grandparents. He was 96 and she was in her late 80s, and he passed away at age 100, my grandmother around 93.
Good heavens.
That was the very first oral interview. I wanted to learn something about the Rio Puerco, and that sort of spiraled into any number of interviews which I conducted for the next 30 years. And my interview with my paternal grandparents was in 1968, but my first interview with a local, at that time, of course, all these folks were, the old-timers were living in Albuquerque, but I guess my first interview with a former Rio Puerco resident was in the late 1970s, 1977. And that went on for a number of years. And so that's how it started. As far as the process, it's a laborious process because I was living in Colorado at the time, and I would have to travel to New Mexico, setting up interviews via phone, via letters. There was no email at that time. Of course, the old folks, they wouldn't have known what to do with emails. So I would travel 350 miles, 400 miles to Albuquerque, and interview a number of people. I would go back. I would transcribe these interviews. I would transcribe them and translate them, and then put together a manuscript, which I did for several of my books. But it was very, very time-consuming. It's a lot harder than people envision. But that's part of the process. And, of course, then comes publishing, which is another barricade that one must traverse. Back in 1987, when I had my first oral history publication by UNM in cooperation with the Historical Society of New Mexico, that in itself, of course, was a process that UNM at that time was not really used to. My stories were, I guess, in a manner of speaking, and I say this modestly, was really threading new waters. And since then, of course, it's been easier. But publishing is not altogether easy. It's difficult for any number of reasons. That gives you a sense of what I've been through as far as publishing.
Did the interviews build on one another? So you interviewed first your grandparents and then one person, another person. Did you bring things from one interview to inform you about the next one?
Yes, and I think the question is an excellent one because it has to do with the evolution of the process. I would interview, and let me go back a bit. There was a lady, a former resident of the Rio Puerco. Her name was Adelita Gonzalez. And I was told that she kept a little black book. And in that little black book, she had the names and addresses of all, of many of the former residents of the Rio Puerco. And so I was, she would say, now, if you want to know about the penitentes, you contact so-and-so. If you want to know about singing the entregas, the wedding songs, you talk to so-and-so. And then I would go talk to these people, and they would recommend somebody else for a particular subject. And so that's how this evolved. And it was quite fascinating because I was able to interview people for their quote-unquote expertise.
Right, right. And the expertise is basically about a way of life that has changed so much so quickly. It's kind of mind-boggling how much has changed in your lifetime and the lifetime of your parents and grandparents. What are some of those changes?
Oh, my goodness. I could recite chapter and verse, I suppose, but let me give you at least an example or two. When I would talk to these individuals, to the viejitos, the old-timers, and this was in the 70s, they had left the valley as early as the 1918, after the First World War, Second World War, Korean War. So during that 50-year period, for example, a lot has changed. As an example, when you talk to them about just farming and their way of eking out an existence, they had no tractors. And that was a dramatic change. They did not use fertilizer. That was another dramatic change. So those are a couple of examples. However, in terms of their own customs, a lot had changed because the young people, the grandchildren and great-grandchildren, quit going to church. They no longer believe that to carve your way to heaven, you had to be religious. At least not by going to church every Sunday and, as one, as my grandmother would say, and pounding your chest every Sunday. You didn't have to do that anymore because right. The young people thought that to be religious meant it's something between you and a supreme being and not having to go please the local priest. And so those are a couple of examples, but there are many, many more.
With the farming example, I mean, I have people on the air who are talking about organic farming and getting rid of all these petroleum inputs, and it seems like some of it is going to new techniques, but some of it is really returning to the things that these grandparents did and already knew.
That's correct. And I think if you were to look at the entire spectrum of interviews that I conducted with these people, you get a true sense of what life was like on the one hand, but what life is not like anymore. And of course, all of these people have passed on. And what I hope that my oral history of books will contribute is a sense of history, a sense of perspective, and a sense of being for these people.
And a sense of who we are, the next generation.
Exactly.
We're talking to Nazario Garcia. Now, I think sometimes it's easy to romanticize the times of our grandparents and great-grandparents, but in fact, it was incredibly rough, the lives that they lived in so many different ways.
Indeed. And I think that those of us who sit around a computer in this day and age and we look at our kids, our grandkids with iPads and smartphones and so forth, that is more than a quantum leap going back to what our grandparents and great-grandparents' lives were like, because it was a tough life. And let me underscore at least one thing that I try to do whenever I speak about these folks. Not only were they tough, they were resilient. And unfortunately, we tend and have tended to put the emphasis on the role that the male played. The male could not have existed without that the support, the strong support of women. And I always say the man in public flaunted their so-called machismo, but in reality, it's only because women allowed them to. At home, they called the shots. And that's why I put together a book called Comadres. And let me tell you briefly how that came about. My maternal grandmother was a curandera, and I would spend the summers with her. I was her pharmacist in residence. I would boil all the herbal remedies and take them to her. Then I had to go in the kitchen. She would not allow me where the patients were. One Saturday at the end of the day, she found me after she saw her last patient. She found me moping in the kitchen, and she came in and she said, "What is wrong with you?" I said, "Nada, nada, nothing." She said, "Don't give me that. There is something wrong." And I said to myself, "Grandma, you asked for it." I said, "Only women ever come here." And she looked at me straight in the eye and she said, "Hijito, blessed art thou who are amongst women." And I have never forgotten that. And I think that was that she shortcutted, and she certainly put me on stage, if you will, about my seeming chauvinism at 6-7 years old. And you know, she was prophetic in her words, because I grew up in a family of 4 sisters. My mother, my 2 grandmothers, and my great-grandmother. I have 2 daughters, and I have 2 granddaughters. So my life has been a life of women. So my grandma, I think, was prophetic in her words.
And you were blessed.
I was blessed.
So there are so many stories that are in the When the Stars Trembled in Rio Puerco, and you, Shevana, have had to, making it into a staged reading, do selection, what's appropriate for stage, what are the most important stories, what was your process?
Well, my process was, first, was the encounter with Nazario. I met him about a year ago, and he was speaking about some of his work, and the feeling was that this should be on stage, even though I hadn't written anything for the stage before. I had a feeling it should be a play, because when you look at the book, Recuerdos, it's these little vignettes. They're all about a page each, maybe 2 pages. These little kind of frozen moments, but not frozen, you know, moving. And what I did was I just began reading and seeing what moved, what popped, you know, because as a writer and a director, that's, you work with what moves you. That's the first criteria for me. And so there were things that I remembered, like this man remembering in the early 1900s, the Navajo coming on raids and having to run in the river. And he said something like, "Estaba chiquito, pero era el más valiente." You know, I was the youngest, but I was the bravest, you know.
And who was that based on? Who was the más valiente?
Was that Juan Armijo? I can't remember.
I'm sorry.
Who said that? That recuerdo.
This was Juan Armijo, whom I interviewed in Old Town in Albuquerque. A colorful individual, yes.
Like that, and another one was, it was just, there was a story about another person, I think it was Adrian Chavez, maybe, who remembered getting sick and not knowing it was influenza, the epidemic. And just remembering waking up one day and he had lost almost all of his family except for his father and a grandmother. And he remembered singing, you know, people singing and carrying a coffin. And Nazario interviewed someone else about that time, Vences Gabaldon, who sang you an alabado that we use in the show. The actual show, there's a scene, we dramatized that scene of this boy remembering waking up and hearing singing, and as people walk across the stage, we have the alabado sung by Vences Gabaldon in 1980 something.
I could add that the gentleman who told the story about the influenza was Luciano Sanchez.
That's right.
And what's dramatic about this story is that at the end of the interview, I said, "Is there anything you haven't told me that you would like to share?" And he paused for a couple of seconds, and he said, "Yes, there is something that I have never told anybody." when the influenza struck, he was around 6 or 7 when he lost 5 members of his family, and he told the story 60-some years later. And he remembered, it was his description of what happened is vivid and dramatic. And at the end, he says, I was left with only 2 members of the family. I felt alone. I felt so sad. And you could just see the drama in his face. It is one of the most poignant stories I have recorded, and I'm glad that Shivana included that, because that underscores the toughness of these people. And there was no radio, there was no newspaper. These people suffered and died in isolation. So I'm glad Shivana included that.
I mean, the other thing that's running through all the whole book is Nazario. He's the invisible. Nazario was born in the Rio Puerco.
Yeah.
So he had that connection. Everybody knew him. They knew his family. So people would say, Nazario, you know that place over there by that place? That's the place I'm talking about. Or so-and-so that your father, you know, the person, that's who I'm talking about. So that's what I decided to incorporate into the play. I condensed these many stories into 4 viejito narrators, including an abuela, because every story like this needs an abuela that I created, but also that they're addressing this invisible Nazario, you know? And so that was another element of the book. So it was these little things, what moved me and what I thought would work.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to take it out of one medium and into another.
That's right.
Medium, which is the dramatic. Now, Nazario, have you been part of the process of, I mean, have you been there when the play has been rehearsed and directed and so on?
Well, I have been to the rehearsals, but Shivana is very talented in putting the script together. The last thing I wanted to do was meddle or interfere, as it were, because she's done a beautiful job. And I might add, so that Shivana could chime in here, as far as the script, there is humor. And maybe you want to relate something about the priest.
Oh, there were all these funny little, you know, random anecdotes about a priest who got drunk on the way to the post office, an encounter with or in the middle of all these really intense stories, there's a bunch of recuerdos about when the land grazing laws changed, and in the 1930s. And you had to have a certain amount of, according to some of the memories, a certain amount of cattle in proportion to the land that you owned. If you had more, government agents came out and either watched as you shot your cattle or shot your cattle as you watched. And it was a big wound. There's traumatic stories. There's also a very funny story about a very mean cow who got the better of 2 agents. And so, yeah, that humor is a big part of the play as well, yeah.
And what's humorous about that episode is that the ranger did not believe what the local guy said, Salomon Lobato, that was the narrator of the story, said, and the ranger thought that we were just spoofing, that we were just kidding. And when this mean cow came at him, he said, here you had this burly looking ranger who weighed probably about 225 pounds, and there was only, he said, about 6 inches clearing between the latias and the fence, and he went right through.
We're talking to Nazario Garcia and Shivana Coelho and Argus McCallum, who has been sitting very quietly, about the Teatro Paraguas production of When the Stars Trembled in Rio Puerco. So tell us about this whole festival. It's called Under One Umbrella.
Under One Umbrella Festival. Shivana Coelho and Daniel Banks and Vina Visita and Cristina Vigil.
Bernadette Peña.
Started, 6, 7 weeks ago, kind of brainstorming and deciding to see what could be possible at Teatro Paraguas. And we have actually done this show, When the Stars Trembled in Rio Puerco. We did it as a stage reading up in Dixon in the summer, so we have a little track record with it.
We're hoping to be able to do a full production of it next spring. So what you see at the preview on Friday is also going to be a fundraiser. We're doing an Indiegogo campaign a crowdfunding campaign to raise funds to do a full production.
So this is a staged reading?
This is a preview. Yeah, they select scenes. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love staged readings.
Do you?
Yeah, because they allow your imagination to fill in the details.
Yeah. Well, we're moving. It's the stage part of it. It's staged. So meaning like there's movement. It's not a table read. We are giving you something to help your imagination go further.
Not only do we have the select scenes that evening on Friday, November 22nd, but we have a section of the program called Share Your Recuerdos, where we have an open mic. People can bring their stories from yesteryear or many yesteryears ago. So we're really looking forward to that, hoping to collect even more stories. And then on
ladies and gentlemen, especially the elders, show up
That's
on Friday
right.
and show up remembering some of your stories, because this is a real opportunity. And will they be recorded?
They can be. We can do that.
Yeah,
but if they want to, I mean, there might be someone there recording. But
yeah.
It's mostly that they're shared in this ambiente of like the past, interacting with the past, as opposed to just remembering, interacting with. That's what the whole evening is about: interacting, bringing it, reimagining it.
Right.
So that's on Friday. On Saturday, from 1 to 7 o'clock, there are a number of events, including what we're calling cafecitos with the artists. We have a number of artists, including Joan Logie, who is going to come and read from her work and have a conversation with the audience, as well as Robert Benjamin, a playwright from Los Alamos, and Joey Chavez, who is the theater chair at the New Mexico School for the Arts. And we've done one of his plays, Manhattan Glass, which is Manhattan Glass is about his grandparents' involvement with the Manhattan Project. So it's kind of a similar process. He would collect these stories and from his grandparents and got them into a play. And also with we have one cafecito with Caridad Savic through Skype. She is the author of many, many fine plays, including In the Time of the Butterflies, which Teatro Paraguas did in March.
I love that you can do these things through Skype now. Project their faces. They're there, kind of, almost. Pretty soon they're going to be projecting holograms of the person.
That's right. We're a long way from the Rio Puerco here
with
Skype.
Yeah, right. And it's also the open, we kind of have this community arts sharing where in between these cafecitos we have people from the community, individuals, you come and share a poem, a scene, a story. Many people under one umbrella.
Right.
We have five or 10 minute slots for different performers of all types, all kinds. And then on Sunday, November 24th at 5 p.m., we have a reading of Cascarones, a play by Irma Mayo Roriga, and directed by Daniel Banks, which is a play that's about 10 years old. It's not been done very often, but it's a fabulous play about a teenager in San Antonio, Texas, giving directions to people for the bus routes and encountering her own history as she does so. So it's an amazing weekend. I have to thank Shivana and Daniel Banks and Bernadette, Christina, and Vina for putting so much work into it. We're all a little bleary-eyed, but we're really looking forward to the weekend.
But Friday is coming right up, and the play When the Stars Trembled in Rio Puerco is at 7 o'clock on Friday. Once again, it's a benefit. Shivana, I want to ask you, I mean, you were from India. Does this make you want to go back and interview your own family and ancestors and so on?
I mean, yes. I don't know how to explain the connection to the Rio Puerco and to New Mexico. It makes me want to do many things. What it makes me want to do is make more things vivid. You know, like, what was remarkable about this project is having access to a set of stories about a particular place that, you know, the process really, what it made clear to me is that how I'd like, for me, the thing that draws me is making something immersive for someone, vivid. You know, I think it makes me want to do more theater, actually, more of that interaction. I just love the encounter with the material, the encounter with the space, the encounter with working with these different actors and seeing it transformed. So, yes, I'd like to go to India. Yes, I'd like to go to many places after this.
Nazario, what are you working on when all of this is done? Do you have any other projects going?
I'm always working on something. I'm like the juggler and who doesn't stop. Not really. I'm not a fanatic when it comes to my work. I'm not a slave of my work, but I always have something in the back of my mind. Ideas come to me at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. It's not a sequel as such, but I have I finished a story called Grandpa Lolo and Trampa. Trampa is a coyote. It's a story of mystery. And then I have Grandma Lale's Tamales. It's a Christmas story. And Grandma Lale was actually my grandma's name. So okay. It sort of rhymes, Grandma Lale's Tamales. That's also in the hands of a publisher. And I have a collection of mini stories. The idea being that today's kids don't seem to have time to read a full-length story. So I developed 20 stories. They're one-pagers. They can read before they go to bed. And they're all stories of magic in New Mexico. I also finished a memoir in the Rio Puerco. It's 450 pages. That's under review by UNM Press. And then I want to work. I'm currently working on a collection of stories that I will call probably Broken Bridges. Going from the rural New Mexico into the city and the changes, the trauma of adjusting from rural life to city life. And I have any number of other projects that I want to work on, but that's, in a nutshell, that's what I'm working on now.
Well, it looks like we'll have many opportunities to get you on the air again. I hope we do, and I want to thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Nazario Garcia, author and oral historian, and Shebana Coelho, poet, author, playwright, director now, and Argos McCallum, who is with Teatro Paraguas. It's the Under One Umbrella Festival at Teatro Paraguas all weekend. The play When the Stars Trembled in Rio Puerco is Friday night at 7 o'clock. It's a fundraiser. Everybody be there. And for more information, teatroparaguas.org. Thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Thank you.
Thank you.